Welcome to East Meets West, episode 173. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Roger Chang.
And this is our second episode live on the TWiT network. TWiT went a little bit long. They got a little bit caught up talking about the old iPhone MMS. So the audio version of the East Meets West podcast will be a little different this week. It'll be about 15 minutes of this episode. And then we'll actually put the audio from last week's TWiT update from DragonCon at the end. Because we never we never published that. Now, the audio quality of that was pretty uneven, to be kind.
Spotty.
Yeah, it's a little spotty, which is why we didn't put it out last week. But since we're running short on time this week, we'll kind of throw that in as a bonus. But this week, I've been all caught up in TV land, Roger.
Have you? I think a lot of people have. I have not. I know a bunch of new seasons have started, and you know, I don't know what it is, but I think television of late has just not really captured my attention. I've tried watching, you know, shows that a lot of people like talking about, and I really can't get into it. I can't, like 30 Rock, I'll watch every once in a while. I know that Tina Fey did collect an Emmy for her Sarah Palin impression on SNL. And what was it? Dr. Horrible got one, but yeah. You know, for the most part, most shows on TV I cannot get hooked into. The Wire, people talked about, couldn't get into that. What's the new one? It's another cop-like show. It has I wish I knew it was on cable.
But, I don't know. You know what? I'm not paying attention to any of those. After we got back from DragonCon, y'all were making such a big deal about the Venture Brothers that I went back and I watched all three seasons of the Venture Brothers last week.
Venture Brothers is awesome. It's actually
incredible.
It's for those who may not know, Venture Brothers is an adult-oriented cartoon that spoofs the old Johnny Quest TV series. And when I say adult, I don't mean just being kind of crude, but I mean
The characters get naked a lot.
Yes, and there's a lot of excrement and urine.
Yeah, it's not like porn or anything like that. But no. Yeah, it's adult humor.
It's done in a remarkably funny and a witty way, especially when they dovetail a lot of different TV shows into it. They did one episode where they had the old Bionic Man series with Lee Majors.
Oh right, yeah, $6 Million Man.
They crossed that show with Bionic One with Lindsay Wagner, and they came across a Bigfoot.
Yes,
that episode where they were controlled by it. Well, they integrated that into an episode where the Bionic Man and the Bigfoot actually fell in love, and they
Brock is trying to go camping and runs across his old buddy, who is essentially Lee Majors, who fell in love with Bigfoot, which is a cross to the Leonard Nimoy, rumor that he, when he was in search of Bigfoot, found Bigfoot. And then there's the Jonathan Colton song that speculates that Leonard Nimoy fell in love with Bigfoot. I don't know if that was an intentional reference there or not, but yeah. Pop culture references are fast and furious in the Venture Brothers, and they all seem to be like dead on in my areas of familiarity.
Now, let me ask you this. Do you think television of the past 5 years has become smarter, like in terms of writing, character development, situations?
You know, that's an interesting question. I was thinking about this recently because we're always talking on Buzz Out Loud about, what the future of video is. And now that there's the internet and piracy and all the blah, 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 blah. And I think, honestly, that television is really hitting its stride, not as television, because concentration-wise, if you look at it, I think we have one of the lowest concentrations of quality that we've ever had in television's history. So in one way, I'd say no, television has actually gotten dumber when you look at the bulk of it. But if you look at the high points, the things that are really good are the best we've ever seen. We have really hitting our stride with this medium, and I feel like shows like Lost and shows like Heroes are the first to really take advantage of the serial nature of television to rival movies, where you look at this show the way you used to look at a Dickens novel, which is essentially as a short story released over time. And these are going to be consumed in the future as one huge storyline. And so from that sense, I think we actually have some of the best television being produced that we ever have. And I think that will continue. I think people will still want that. It doesn't matter what the medium of delivery is.
Yeah, it's weird because I half agree with you and I half disagree with you. I think there is a lot more crap. I think the nets have gotten wider. You get more of everything. So since crap is, you know, the LCD, the lowest common denominator, is made up a bulk of programming, you just get more of it. I've seen some really good shows kind of trail off, like Heroes. It had a really good hook, and then there was a point in there where they weren't sure where to go, and they just started throwing things into the plot line to see what would stick.
Well, and what's interesting with Heroes, too, is that they kind of make each season self-contained rather than having the arc continue over every season, although there is a seasonal arc as well.
Well, I mean, it's funny because I think Babylon 5 was the first U.S. TV series to actually do that, where you had an overarching, you know, plot line from the first season to the last season, mm-hmm. and followed up through, you know, Buffy and numerous episodes. I think Lost is done the same way, where there's a definite story arc between all the seasons. And
yeah, and I think Heroes' unique take is that each season is sort of one edition, and then the next edition has that overall story arc, but it also has an internal story arc just to that season.
And so it's. You know, I feel that the shows that have done well, the producers are confident and the studios are confident. They're willing to let the content be driven by the show's writers. Shows that aren't as even, for example, a classic example is Terminator: The Sarah Connor Chronicles. You know, had an uneven storyline. It really picked up in the last season. They had a great story line and the plot was awesome, and they ended it right at the end. And you're totally like, oh, if only they started that way.
Yeah, I totally agree. Because Sarah Connor Chronicles is one of those things that I would pick up and I'd watch, and then I'd drop, and then I'd watch, and I wouldn't even feel like I needed to go back and catch up. Like, I'd be like, you know what, I'm just going to jump in, and then it would get really good again. So it's sort of static. You know, the other thing is I've been catching up on Fringe, because I dropped out of that show after about the fourth episode last season.
It stopped after the third.
And then a bunch of people were telling me it really picked up around 7 or 8. So I got back in and started watching the old episodes, and they're right. Like, they changed the characters quite a bit to make them a lot more compelling, and the storyline that they had started to unveil really starts to become compelling, so that you really get drawn into the mystery that's going on, which those first 5 or 6 episodes are very self-contained. There's hints to the future mystery, but it just feels like a rehash of The X-Files. Later episodes still have the self-contained storylines in each episode, but you're really getting a lot more meat on the overall story arc.
Now, I'll admit to having certain guilty pleasures, like I watch The Deadliest Catch, and I watch The Ice Road Truckers. And it's one of those things where, you know, it seems like a very banal concept when you hear about it. If someone gave you a treatment on a sheet of paper and said, so basically, we're going to do a show about guys who drive trucks on ice. Well, it's like, yeah, I don't think that's going to pass 3 episodes, but it's strangely compelling. Even things like Dirty Jobs, which can be pretty high-minded, you know, with a look at, you know, certain occupations that people might consider a little less than legitimate. It's a very interesting show. I mean, it's these things that I would have never thought would make a compelling concept have me hooked, and I watch, like, on a weekly basis. I watch Dirty Jobs so he can clean out the alligator pool and pull out the snapping turtles.
Yeah,
I watch it to see.
I think that's an interesting example of what we're talking about, which is you can say reality show, and are reality shows good or bad? Well, yeah, a bunch of the time they suck. You know, they are just horrible. But a lot of the time, reality shows really capture something. And I think Ice Road Truckers may be an example. It sounds compelling to me. I haven't watched more than a few bits of an episode. I think Top Chef is an example of a reality show done really well. I mean, you see some of the greatest chefs of the century now wanting to be involved as judges or participating in Top Chef. I think that's a testament to the quality that they put on that show versus something like I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, or, you know, Dancing with the Stars or something, which is a little more fluffy.
Well, speaking of food, I mean, have you seen Anthony Bourdain's No Reservations?
Oh, that's a fantastic show. I love No Reservations.
Fantastic concept. Yeah. Uses food as kind of the vehicle in which to kind of portray the Anthony's travels. But it's food is such a keystone of culture that no matter where he goes, you know, even if it's someplace in the Midwest or if it's somewhere, you know, very familiar to us, it's still very interesting. Conversely, he did one where he asked viewers to send in, you know, their pitches for why Anthony should come out to their particular city and eat and have them show him around. He eventually settled on a woman who was living in Saudi Arabia, and he went with that because that was the least easy choice. It was the most difficult one because he didn't see him having any kind of interesting adventures there, you know, let alone culinary ones. But he went. And to his surprise, he got a very, very eye-opening experience, not just through the culture, but the food and the way people, the society interacts with itself was very, very intelligently done. And it was amazing. I was like, I sat there and I watched the whole thing from start to finish.
Well, I think it shows in the premise of No Reservations where he says, look, you know, I am going to document what I really do. I'm not going to do a lot of, you know, like stand up, oh, we're faking this for TV. I want to capture what's really going on. And he mocks himself as a TV host a lot of the time as part of that, you know, because they do have this scripted voiceover part. And so he exaggerates it. And I think that's one of the things that makes it really fun. And it's one of the things that allows them to capture those moments that you're talking about.
Now, since the fall season is upon us, I will say that I am looking forward to watching the new Stargate spinoff.
Stargate Universe, correct. I'm not sure when that – I actually have a list here on my phone of when stuff is premiering. There's a
someone in the chat room mentioned V, which I also want to see.
Oh, yeah. V would be an excellent one. Yeah, next week Fringe and The Office are premiering, and then Heroes a week from Monday. Flash Forward on ABC. Are you interested in that?
Flash Forward, I've only heard a little bit about. What's the take on, or what's the premise on that?
It's an ABC show, and it's sort of a you see the future 6 months from now, and then there's a terrible disaster, and then I guess the episodes take place 6 months previous, and what are people going to do now that they know what's coming? So it's kind of time travel prescience sort of thing. That's Thursday,
September
24th. Do
they know what's coming 6 months down the line, or is it just like 6 months?
I guess the question is, can they prevent, you know, now that they've flashed forward and seeing it? Stargate Universe is October 2nd, by the way.
Ooh. Oh, definitely I need to keep that in mind because, I don't know, before I kind of pushed that show off as kind of a lame attempt at doing a BSG with Stargate.
Yeah,
but
okay.
The more I've seen of it, it has as promised.
We're not going to get V until November. Jeez.
Ah. Oh, well, you know, it is the networks.
It is. That's true. But I think, you know, when I'm watching Warehouse 13 on Sci-Fi, and it's sort of like, you know what, this is just sort of an entertaining concept, and there's not much else on. But if that was up against a lot of the stuff that's coming out, like Flash Forward, The Return of Lost in January, V, Stargate Universe, I probably would stop watching it because it's just not that high level. And I think that's the thing, is we're seeing some really high level, good cinematic art from television, which has been pretty rare in the past.
It's interesting that you mentioned Warehouse 13 because I really wanted to like that episode.
I did too. And you know what? I still like it. It's really fluffy. That's the thing. It's just a fluffy show. Eureka is a better example of that kind of show, where
yes.
Eureka is it's meant to be light. It's meant to be almost a sci-fi comedy, but it's still got some depth to it, and it's still enjoyable. And you don't compare it to something like Battlestar Galactica and go, yeah, it's not Battlestar Galactica because it's not supposed to be. And I really like Eureka. I think it's a fantastic show. Warehouse 13, on the other hand, it's trying to be like Eureka and be that light sci-fi comedy. And the writing just disappoints me all the time. Good concepts.
Remember when they redid Twilight Zone? They made an updated Twilight Zone for like the 90s?
Yeah, right.
It's the same premise. It's like suddenly all the harshness, all the kind of gravity of the original series went away for a more kind of softer, less offensive version. And I think part of Warehouse 13's issue is that it's just not really kind of edgy. Not maybe not
edgy. I
think
that concept shouldn't be a comedy. That concept should be a drama. Because they come up with amazing stuff. Well, they're trying to be a dromedary. They're actually trying to be a dromedy, and they end up a dromedary. They're just a freaking camel. They show stinks like a camel. All right, we're going to have to wrap it up. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And thanks for commenting at sabrilliant.com/EMW. Good discussions in there about the health care still. Good discussions about Obama's address to the schools and the meaning of the English language. I'm sure we'll have some good discussions about television this coming week. And keep them coming, everybody. Appreciate the discussions. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Yeah, we'll give you a short report. The Dragon Con difference from Comic Con is probably what we're going to talk about on this week's East Meets West. It's spread out amongst four hotels versus being in one big conference center, and that has some interesting effects, don't you think, Roger?
It has some. You know, it's on one hand it's confusing. The other time, on the other hand, it's actually very beneficial in terms of spreading out the crowd, so they're not bunched up in one location.
It causes strange backups here and there that you can't really anticipate versus, Comic-Con or at CES where you kind of where the big masses are, although that gives you a way around things. It also seems to be more of an adult situation, and I don't mean that as a euphemism for porn. I just mean you don't see as many kids, and the events last later. They last till 10 or midnight in some cases. So a lot more costume play, don't you think?
Yes, by more of the adults, which is very interesting because it's a combination of popular culture and some very esoteric sci-fi franchises and stories. And, of course, you have a mashup of sorts, people combining one.
Yeah, it's been really fun. We saw a lot of really interesting panels. We've seen the Terry Gilliam, Neil Innes panel talking about Monty Python history. That was a panel. The guys just minutes about the Monty Python. They were. They didn't something, the guy running the panel asked him, and it was.
I was very impressed. I did not know as much of the Monty Python story.
And we also, I caught a couple other panels here. There's too many panels. That's as all these conferences always want to see the new. The same locations, but a very crazy preparedness for the zombie squad is actually teaching people first aid and disaster preparedness under the cover of being prepared for a zombie attack. So it's good. It's a really interesting way of getting folks to do disaster preparedness by tricking them. So you're not really tricking them, but bringing them in under the cover of zombie. So I don't know if they have the code cracked. It's a little bit draggy, but I think the potential is fantastic into exposing disaster preparedness to a group of people that otherwise would never go near it.
I mean, the thing is, if you enjoy any bit of science fiction, fantasy, whether it's a movie, a TV show, it doesn't even have to be a piece of literature, you will find someone to represent that here. And it's the thing I liken it to is if you had Halloween over a 3-day period where it's not so much about where dressing up is part of it, but it's being able to kind of follow your particular nerdy passion, your particular geeky, hobbies, and not feel that you're kind of like the odd man out. Everyone here is the odd man out. There are women who dress in very scantily clad outfits from Star Trek and Star Wars. There are men who like specifically work out so they can have the bulging muscles when they wear the Superman costume.
The Spartans.
There's literally like 11 guys who all work out so they have the exact abs, the muscular definition, so they can go around, half naked with red capes and Spartan helmets and leather loincloth and sandals. It's really fun. I mean, it's from the outside, it might kind of seem like a zoo, but once you're in it, it's so comfortable.
And the parade today was a good example of that, where you had a lot of different people from a lot of different interests dressing up and walking all the way through the middle of Atlanta, Georgia, to cheers. And the crowds weren't just the people attending DragonCon. A lot of local people just came out to watch the show and see people dressed up. Probably a lot of them thought, I'm going to go see a freak show. But they ended up seeing people doing costumes and floats and things that you really are much cooler than a Rose Bowl parade or something like that.
To give you an example, there's a guy out here who's dressed up as Batman. His son's dressed up as Robin. He built his own Batmobile, a replica of the Adam West, Burt Ward Batmobile, drove that in the parade. They did a Road Warrior ode to the bad guys in Road Warrior, not the character that Mel Gibson played, but the bad guys with the leather and the they had that. They built the car. They had the guy they had out there. They had at least 25 to 30 people. The amount of passion, dedication, and involved, in many ways, it's like Burning Man, except without the kind of without the desert. You know, this is kind of people really get ready for this. They plan all year. They design the costumes. They organize themselves because a lot of these people don't live in the area. They come from the Northeast, West Coast, Midwest. They all come. They coordinate over email and message boards. It's amazing.
And the thing is, there's a lot of niches here. You can go into one panel, and you'll find a bunch of people dressed up as comic book heroes, as you might expect, the stereotype of a con. But you go to another panel, say, there was a panel on, and Joe Harris writes the Suki Stack novels, and a lot of other Southern writers talking. It was called Y'all Versus You Guys, and it was a panel full of women ages, 30 to 60, who were really into these sort of, not gothic like you think of from the, bodice ripper side, but these gothic romances that are sort of a new wave. So it's just really diverse. I see a guy dressed as a bunny in a wheelchair right now.
It's diverse and it's multi-ethnic. It's not, the cons used to be kind of relegated to the middle white class, but, there are people from many diverse backgrounds. In anime, it's typically Asian and white, but here it's black, Asian, white, because and Hispanic. So, it's definitely people really kind of latching onto a passion that they enjoy. I'll be honest, I wasn't sure what to expect, and I thought I might not enjoy it because it was so complicated the way the hotels and the different panels were set up, and I was kind of like, I'll admit it, I was a little apprehensive and a little overwhelmed at how complex it seemed. But once I got here, I talked to the people. I talked to the con goers. Very friendly, very open. A lot of people took the time out to explain how these things were, and I got a better handle of it. The only thing I can really criticize is maybe from an organizational level, they need to do a better job of kind of integrating the various outlets, the various panels, the registration in a more seamless and a little more kind of speedier affair.
Yeah, they could take a few tips from Comic Con on the streamlining. Comic Con has got it down. Dragon Con is actually younger than Comic Con. Are they around the same age? Do you know? No. How long are the cons going on?
The age group came in a little late.
Okay.
Definitely came. And I've been around since everything started. And it's actually different. Comic Con's been around, and it's been around so that there isn't to be a movie television that relatively nascent. So you do see some of it here and there, but for the most part, it's fans driven content. And that's what I like about it. There's parties here that you do not get at Comic-Con. Comic-Con parties are all either industry parties or you have to know someone party. Here it's an open to anyone with a badge party. And as long as you're old enough to drink, you can get in. It's after hours. It's fantastic.
Okay, I don't think you heard any of that because we're really using up our bandwidth. So maybe that ends our summer. Yeah, I'd say the costume play is definitely more serious at this one than at Comic-Con. Not that Comic-Con isn't serious, Comic-Con fans.
Because of the age group, These are people who have the financial means to spend the money and the time to do the sewing, the riveting, locating the materials, making sure it's accurate to any kind of depicted artwork. Some people, for example, the Stormtrooper thing has been done to death. There's 501 garrisons all across the country and, in fact, all across the world. It's so common now that people are trying to expand out. And in case in point, we saw Stormtrooper kilts, basically Scottish Stormtroopers with kilts running around. And it was the greatest thing because they're taking a very common, commonly identifiable thing, and they've married it with something a little well less well known. And it's fun because you know they're having fun doing it. It's their time to kind of shine, and it's fun. You know, you look down at the bar, you see Spider-Man trying to get a drink.
Yeah, it really is. The one thing that they could improve is the internet. Well, thanks, Leo. I appreciate it, and I wish the internet would have worked out a little better for us. But
yeah, I'm really thankful that you took the time out to help us out, set this up. It was great. Oh, the Princess Leia slave girls, yes. There's a lot of them. You don't understand. There's actually a group of them. They actually come together. They're from different places in the country, but there literally is kind of a club of Princess Leia slave girls, and they all dress up, and they all get together, and you get dirty together.
There's one right over there right now.
Yeah, I know. I've been looking at her. I can't keep my eyes off her. You know what, Leo? You would enjoy this. If you came here, you would be like a kid in a candy store. I cannot begin to describe it. This is really, really fun. I didn't think so, but I'm really enjoying it.
You have a much bigger diversity of people dressing up. You have, you know, lots of steampunk folks that are just inventing their own characters. A lot of folks just inventing their own characters. I don't even know what they are from. You know, as well as the stuff that you recognize. It's fun.
It doesn't matter. Most of these people that come here are only familiar with their particular me. And it's fun because you can talk to these people and they explain it as fans would do. So enthusiastic, so passionate about it, you can't help feel kind of caught up. No, I want you. You should come next year and you should dress up like. No, you know what? There's a lot of, like Tom was saying, I've seen people in their like early 60s, late 50s, you know, attending this event. You know, a lot of people, and it's great. You don't feel self-conscious at all because there's so many other people doing the exact same thing.